Thank you. Patishu.
Patishu.
On the forest paths.
On the forest paths.
Cha. Also.
Also.
Mukta Bhavena.
Mukta Bhavena.
Childish behavior of the deer.
Childish behavior of the deer. Vishaktamati,
whose mind was too much attracted.
Whose mind was too much attracted.
Pranaya.
Pranaya.
Love.
Hara.
Hara. Loaded. Hridaya. Whose heart.
Whose heart.
Karpanya.
Karpanya.
Because of affection and love.
Because of affection and love.
Sandena.
Sandena.
By the shoulder.
By the shoulder.
Udbhavati.
Udbhavati.
Carries.
Carries.
Evam.
Evam.
In this way.
In this way.
Utsange. Sometimes on the lap.
Sometimes on the lap.
Urasi.
Urasi.
On the chest while sleeping.
On the chest while sleeping.
Chur. Also.
Also.
Adhaya.
Adhaya.
Keeping.
Keeping.
Upalalayam.
Upalalayam.
Fondling.
Fondling.
Udam.
Udam.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Paramam.
Paramam.
Very great.
Very great.
Avapa.
Avapa.
Effect.
Effect.
When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Maharaj Bharat due to its childish behavior. When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Maharaj Bharat due to its childish behavior. Maharaj Bharat would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap or when sleeping on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal. Maharaj Bharat left his home, his wife, his children, his kingdom and everything else, right, to advance in his spiritual life in the forest. But again he fell victim to material affection due to his attachment to an insignificant pet deer. What then was the use of his renouncing his family? One who is serious in advancing in his spiritual life should be very cautious not to become attached to anything but Krishna. Sometimes, in order to preach, we have to accept many material activities. But we should remember that everything is for Krishna. If we remember this, there is no chance of our being victimized by material activities.
ज्ञानदृश्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयंरूपदानमयं ददाति स्वकलासितं मुखां करोति वाचां पङ्गुं लङ्घायते किं यत्कृपालतमां वन्दे श्रीगुरुदिनतायम्
When entering the forest, the animal would appear very attractive to Mahabharata due to its childish behavior. Mahabharata would even take the deer on his shoulders and carry it due to his affection. His heart was so filled with great love for the deer that he would sometimes keep it on his lap, or when sleeping, he would keep the deer on his chest. In this way, he felt great pleasure in fondling the animal. So, this is a glorious section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, one of the very oft quoted sections in many classes on Srimad Bhagavatam, especially when it comes to the nature of material attachments. This is an exemplary chapter for all of us. So, Lord Rishabhdev, who was none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had many children, out of which one was Maharaj Bharat, a very ideal son, a very ideal king, actually a very ideal devotee also. So, Maharaj Bharat, though he had a very, very big kingdom to manage, and because he managed it so well, India is known as Bharatavarsh because of him. So that Bharatavarsh was such a big jurisdiction. Narendra Modi is dead. Okay. But still, Bharatavarsh was much more than India during those days. So you can imagine his jurisdiction, how much it spread. So self-realized was he that he did not become attached to that particular kingdom or jurisdiction or power. Yesterday the speaker was talking about how in the United States the whole civil war that we are seeing right now is because of one man's attachment to his seat, who doesn't want to move away from that power. So he has enjoyed everything in his life. He has enjoyed power, he has enjoyed women, he has enjoyed money, but still the heart is not satisfied. Still the heart, the mind wants more and more and more. There is no end to it. There is no end to this material madness. So, whereas Bharatavarsh was not like, though he had much higher jurisdiction than the United States of America, without a forethought, he just quit everything and he left home to realize God or to dedicate his life, rest of his life, full time in Krishna consciousness. But then we see that when he went to the forest, he got attached to a deer. So much so that he got attached to the deer that he forgot his, he became slack in his spiritual duties. And that is the biggest lesson that we get from this section. Maharaj Bharat was not an ordinary devotee. It is mentioned that bhakti has several stages. Bhakti starts with Shraddha. Shraddha means loose faith. With some faith, people come into Krishna consciousness. When they come in, the next stage is called Sadhu Sangha. They associate with devotees. Having associated with devotees, they start chanting, come to Bhajana Kriya. And when we do Bhajana Kriya, we realize how much of dirt is inside our heart. Till we engage in Bhajana Kriya, till you start cleaning the house, you never know how much saman, whatever, how much material you have accumulated in your house. When you start cleaning, all that dust comes on the plate. Oh my God, it's so dirty. So, till Anartha Nivritti stage happens, we don't come face to face. Till Bhajana Kriya starts happening, we don't come face to face with our anarthas. So, a devotee spends many times, lifetime, or many lifetimes in the stage of Anartha Nivritti. That is the stage in which maximum time goes, the Anartha Nivritti stage for all of us. Cleansing of all unwanted material desires. Cleansing our heart of lust, anger, envy, greed, pride and illusions. So many lifetimes go in that. Now after that comes the stage of Nishtha. Nishtha means condensed faith. Condensed faith. Nishtha does not come, Prabhupada writes in his Japa book, Nishtha means humility. They are not different to each other. Nishtha faith means humility. Unless we develop humility, unless we completely realize our insignificance, unless we completely realize that we are actually not capable of calling ourselves as advanced devotees, when we really fight against our anarthas and we realize the futility of fighting against those anarthas, and we, unless we realize that the only real hope for us is the holy name of the Lord, when we realize that, that then real humility dawns on us. And that is why it is said, Amanita Manadena Kirtani Sarai. Unless we develop the Amanitam, we cannot come to the platform of chanting attentively, consistently. We may chant attentively sometimes, but chanting attentively, consistently will come only when we come to the platform of humility. And when we do that, then our faith also in the holy name is condensed, because we have now put our faith in the holy name only, giving up our faith in everything else. So that is when it comes to platform of Nishtha. So when we come to the platform of Nishtha, then what happens automatically, from the platform of Nishtha, we start developing taste for the holy name. Because now we are completely dependent on the holy name. So automatically we are chanting attentively, and the holy name is giving us reward in the form of giving us taste for itself. Once we get taste for the holy name, then we become attached to the holy name. When, like for example, when we start getting taste for mangoes, first time, then when we start eating mangoes, then what happens? Mangoes taste so good that we start, can't start living without mangoes. So that is called as attachment. Asakti. So that is a very high platform in bhakti. Attachment, only attachment to the Lord. And then from that stage comes ecstasy. When one chants with that level of attachment, and when one performs devotional service at that level, with attachment only to Lord Krishna, then one comes to the platform of Bhava Bhakti, when ecstatic symptoms start manifesting in one's body. So Maharaj Bharat was on that platform, Bhava platform, which is the second last platform. After that, there is only my one platform, which is Prema Bhakti, where you don't even care for your ecstasy, where only your focus is on Lord Krishna's pleasure. So whether you are ecstatic or whether you are not ecstatic, it doesn't matter. Our own emotions do not matter at the level of prema. In the stage of prema, one curtails one's ecstasy, so that it doesn't, or one curtails one's emotions, so that if our emotions for Lord Krishna don't come in the way of our service to Lord Krishna. So that is the level of prema. So we can see that Paramahaya was on a very, very, very high platform. Bhava Bhakti. And he had left everything. He is alone in the forest. And then he saw this deer that from nowhere it came into his life. And then he got attached to the deer. And at that stage, he became slack in his devotional service. Or intensity of Bhakti went down. So, when we hear this pastime, the first thing that when we understand it, where are we? If it happens to Bharat Maharaj, where are we? When we are struggling with another thing, we will be. So, in one sense, that this whole section makes us also humble. Lest we start, sometimes our mind starts giving us messages that we are advancing very nicely in Bhakti. So, when we study this, we will make no mistakes about ourselves. So, Prabhupada is writing a beautiful purport, very short purport, very, very nice purport here. Maharaj Bharat left his home, wife, children, kingdom, and everything to advance in his spiritual life in the forest. But again, he fell victim to material affection due to his attachment to an insignificant pet deer. What then was the use of his renouncing his family? It's as good as everything has come to zero, even at that platform. Actually, it's not like that. But right now, Prabhupada is setting the mood for all of us. There is a pastime going on here. Lesson is for all of us. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, 23rd chapter, text number 56, there is a beautiful verse that Devotee mentioned. It's a very famous verse. I have heard it many times. It says, Neha yat karma karmaya na vyagaya karpate na tirtha paap sevaye jivan api mrito hi saka. What is the meaning of that? Na iha yat karma karmaya. Anyone's work that which does not elevate that person to religious level. Our karma should lead to dharma. Na iha yat karma dharmaya. Our work should lead us to religious level. Na iha yat karma dharmaya. Na viragaya kalpate. So, such a religion or dharma must lead to renunciation or virakti. Viraga. Na viragaya kalpate. Viragni is renunciation, detachment. So whatever work we do, it should lead to religion, religious life. Whatever religious life we adopt must lead to renunciation and detachment. And then it says, Nehaya karma dharmaya na viragaya kalpate na tirtha paada sevaye jivan abhimuktavasa. But such renunciation and detachment, if it does not lead to uninterrupted devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then such a person must be considered dead even while breathing. Jivan api mrito hi sah. So work should lead to religion. Religion should lead to detachment. And detachment should lead to devotion. If this cycle is not there, then what is the use of detachment? So Prabhupada is also writing here, what then was the use of his renouncing his family, if he is again getting attached to something else other than Krishna. So, now, I was talking to one of my office colleagues, a senior person, and that person was asking about my life, and I was telling that I am a devotee. That person knows, very senior person in our office. So, she told me that, Jagan, I am also going to give up corporate life, all this mohamaya, but after I retire. I retire in retirement anyway, the company gives us or anyway we are out. There is a question of giving it up. So, at some stage in life, all this mohamaya I am going to give. Obviously, she was not at that, she is not exposed to Prabhupada's books. I can't tell her after that what you will do. But you know what people do actually. After that, and people who don't have Krishna consciousness, the knowledge of Sambandha, Vijaya, Prayojana, Kyan, most of the people are either in mode of ignorance, or mode of passion, or in mode of goodness. So people who are still in mode of ignorance, but after retirement, what will they do? They will use the retired life to get up at 10 o'clock in the morning. Because of office, they would have had to get up at 6 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning at least, if not 4 o'clock. Right? But after retirement, they say, now I have time to sleep. So they get up very late, and then what they will do? They will have a newspaper in their hand, right? Brush, read newspaper, then along the newspaper comes, what is that word? Sarvasya chaham. Someone said that cha is cha and tea. Someone interpreted it. So they want their tea along with newspaper, tea or coffee. Or then they will put on the television channel. And then after some time they watch stock market, whether it is going up or down, and there will be a big discussion. So, just lazing around, wasting the human form of life. And those people who are called as successful in their lives are those people whose children have also become grandchildren. So then they will play with their grandchildren. After some time they will get fed up of their grandchildren. Why they will get fed up? Because the husband and wife, double income, okay, both will go outside, and in the old age also they will have to put up with the mischief of the grandchildren. Sometimes the grandchildren will not even know, they will take something and hit you only. Right? So they have to go through the pleasure as well as the perils that come with grandchildren. And then the attachment for grandchildren will then grow. Okay. Full life was concern for children. Next, for the next last part of life we will invest in concern for grandchildren. So that is how the life goes, mode of ignorance. The mode of passion, these people are of a different breed. They'll say, now I have achieved the pinnacle of my professional life. Now I want to take up an occupation. Now I don't want to get involved in any management. I have retired as CEO of the company. But now, my retired life for them is what? Now I will be a consultant to the company. On the outside. I know one person who is 80, 82, you know, nearing 82. He was, because he was very senior and I joined as an engineer in my company in India. So he was already on the verge of retirement. So one day I found out that this person is still, you know, trying to do some consulting work. So at 80 and all that. Okay. He's a radiographer, not a radiographer, who sees, you know, defects in metal and all that. Okay. So he's still doing consulting work and he's very proud. All the time he's blogging about his work. Okay, at 80, 82. So they take usually other occupation. And then along with them, you know, these people have formed a group of ex-employees of the company, and all the time they have a blog or something. They are all blogging about their good times and bad times in the company. Some funny incidents that happened, some achievements which they had in 1986, how they solved a production issue. You know, this is what they are discussing. Okay? This is what is mode of passion. Or they will come together occasionally and play some sports. Okay, let's all go and have a game of cricket or let's go for golf. So that's how our retirement plan is spent. Or the others who are in mode of goodness, they will say, okay, now I want to live for others because now I have developed compassion for others. But they do not know what is real compassion because they don't know what is the difference between body and soul. So such people after retirement, they will get engaged in philanthropic activities at best. They will give donation to some orphanage, which is good, not bad. But that's not enough. That's not the goal of life. How to keep people happy inside the jail? I will give a donation to the jail so that the jail, the iron rods of this jail can be greased so that they don't get corroded. It's almost like that. I will put a fan inside the jail. I will paint the jail very nicely with my donations. I will provide good painting so the jailers and the prisoners have a good environment. Amidst their misery, like that. I'll give donation to the jail so that in the morning they get some extra sugar in their tea, or they get some extra salt, or they get some better, the cooks are better paid in the jail so that they cook for the prisoners. But at the end of the day, with all their philanthropy activities, they are only making the prisoners more comfortable in the jail of a deviant existence. So therefore, this is called as misplaced compassion. Don't know where to divert his compassion to. Therefore, Prabhupada is specifically opening his pocket by pointing out the uselessness of such retirement, where one simply leaves home and heart and not using that retirement to develop attachment to the Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 2, text 8, there is a beautiful verse. It says, Dharma sva anushita upsam vishvaksena kathasulila na utpadeya vidirate shrama evahi kevalam. What is the use of all your occupational duties as well as renouncing those occupational duties if one cannot attain rati for the Lord? If that such detachment does not, or occupation doesn't lead you to attachment towards the Lord, everything is useless labor. So Prabhupada is reiterating that point, the first two lines of this verse. What then was the use of his renouncing his family? Now, we have to, Prabhupada has mentioned many times in his books that the very dharma or the intrinsic nature of the soul is to serve. The soul cannot remain without serving someone. The soul has to serve. As long as the hands and legs are flapping and the body is active, we want to serve someone. Now, for service, who will you serve? You will only serve based on your goal. What do you want in life? You will serve based on the goals you want to attain from such service. And usually you will serve people who you are, you will serve that personality to who you are attached to. We will not go and serve someone whose face we cannot tolerate. I'm seeing in the morning. We will not go, okay, I'm going to go and serve that person. No. Of course, that happens only when someone is very serious in spiritual life. They said, okay, I am going to now serve all those people who I am enemies against. So that's a different issue. Usually, For doing service, there has to be some form of attachment to the person whom you want to serve. So, Srila Prabhupada therefore says next, in this purport, one who is serious in advancing spiritual life should be very cautious. One who is serious in advancing spiritual life should be very cautious not to become attached to anything else but Krishna or Krishna's devotees. So therefore Prabhupada is cautioning us in the next line of this verse. That manage your attachment very well, because the nature of the soul is to be attached to somebody. Nature of the soul is to be attached to somebody. Who is that somebody? Because you serve only when there is attachment. So in this case, what happened? Maharaj Bharata was attached to Lord Krishna. So out of the attachment, he gave up his kingdom. But then his attachment is now being directed towards his partner, which is very dangerous. So therefore, Vyavasayika Buddhi Ekena Purandara Bahushakti Anantasya Buddhaya Avartav Vyavasayika. If our intelligence becomes many branched, if our affection has become also many branched in this world, if it is not Krishna Eka Eka Charanam, if it is not only Krishna, then we have opened a small window for Maya. And Maya, what happens? Maya doesn't need big window. Maya only needs that micro, small window. Smaller than the size of your coronavirus. Maya needs only that much space to enter. It will come very quickly. Then it will capture. And the problem with Maya is it doesn't capture fast. If it captures fast, we will realize we are captured. It will capture us very slowly. We won't even realize. Just like in an aircraft, when we are flying at 33,000 feet or 36,000 feet in the air, we don't even realize we are moving. We think,
actually, hang on. Are we even moving?
All the clouds are just like that. Nothing is happening. There is no turbulence, nothing. That's how Maya is. It will not make us realize that we are, that she is capturing us. Suddenly we realize. So, now when a devotee then starts fighting against this Maya, then what will happen? Maya will pose further impediments. Now look at Maharaj Bharat's life. Maharaj Bharat gave up that kingdom. Right? Again, compare it with the situation in the US. His kingdom was much more than what the ex-American president had. Right? But he still gave up that kingdom. And then he went to the forest to do bhajan, his religion bhajan. Right? Now, under Maya attacked him with the gift. So Prabhupada again mentioned many times that there are, in the prison, there are good prisoners and then there are bad prisoners. Who is the policeman always hammer and tongs behind? Is he behind the good prisoners? No. The policeman will be very happy with the good prisoners. Because the good prisoners will not complain about the jail. They will work hard in the jail. Prisoners have a daily rhythm of doing the garden or they sometimes even have production factories inside jails. Okay? So they will work for 8 hours, job they will do. They will come, whatever is given they will accept nicely. Okay? And then they will also do some extra work to please the prison guards so that they get some more, a nice shaving cream from outside. Right? Some good hotel food from outside occasionally. Right? So they will try to keep the prisoners happy. So who is the person who is tested most by the prison guards? Person who is trying to escape. So such a person comes heavier and heavier tests in life. So therefore, Maya will try to defeat us as soon as she sees, oh, here is a living soul going out of my grip. This is what Prabhupada says. Here is a living soul going out of my grip. Catch the fellow now. And we are only as strong as our weakest link. So, once I was reading a book on supply chain management, and as a part of that, they were talking about a production scenario. It says machine 1, machine B, machine C, machine D, and then the product comes out of this machine, goes into this, and then final product comes out. So, the author was saying that real efficiency in manufacturing and production will only come if you identify the slowest link in the chain and work on strengthening that. If you simply add machines on this side and on that side so that you can increase the production, what is the point? Because the inventory will get accumulated usually at that machine, which is slowest. So therefore, instead of just automation, doing automation here and doing automation there and saying that we have done automation, and nothing, no efficiencies are coming out of it, all you need to do is double this machine and then everything will grow slowly. It's the way God has got automation. So he was saying this. So therefore, Prabhupada also writes here that we are only as strong as our weakest link. So we have to identify our weakest link. And what is the weakest link in a spirit in devotee's life? A weakest link is usually our worries. That is our weakest link. What are our worries? We have to come, we have to understand what is our worry in my life. Our weakest link is our fears. Our weakest link is our insecurities in life. Our weakest link is our material desires. And usually our weakest link usually is our present focus in our material life. For example, if health is an issue, that becomes our weakest link. So, because constantly we are focusing on our health, on the health and health of our near and dear ones. So that becomes our weakest link in our focusing on the Lord or focusing on the holy names. And Maya knows that very well. So, and Maya keeps the same. The more we try to overcome Maya, the more she tries to give us harder and harder tests. So, if, for example, talking about identity chanting, it's a classic case. The more and more we try to do identity chanting, what happens? The more and more Maya tries to pull us back. When we don't do identity chanting, Maya doesn't do anything because we are already thinking of something else. Where are you thinking of Krishna anyway? Because there is no question of you pulling back in here. So Maya is also saying, okay, you are anyway with me. And I will give you such nice enjoyment, such that you will never realize where you have, no, when you have finished that activity, that painful activity of chanting. And then, you know, when you finish that last beat, I will give you a sense of extreme relief, don't worry, that I have finished my rounds. But I will not allow you to start chanting in this lifetime. I will only let you finish your rounds in this lifetime. Okay. So, what then is, say, when we read, you know, the books on chanting and we say, no, we hear from devotees, lectures on attentive chanting, we realize that, oh my God, this, you know, attentive chanting is my only real wealth that I want to accumulate in my life, and that is the only thing that I can even do when my hands and legs don't stop cooperating after many years. When I can't do any other services, it's only my attachment to the holy name that is going to see me through till the last stages of my life. Then we start sitting and doing something about it. But when we start sitting and doing something about it, Maya gives a different test. Okay? What does Maya do? It gives us congratulatory messages. Okay? It tells us, so only when you are starting chanting nicely, it will tell you, somewhere it will come into your mind and you say, good, now this is the way to chant. It's exactly that. Chant one mantra at a time. Now you are exactly doing that. Correct. You are not worrying about the mantra which is coming afterwards. Neither are you lamenting about the mantra which is before this. Okay. But right now in all this thinking, we are still talking about attentive chanting. We are not doing attentive chanting. We are thinking about the principles of attentive chanting. So that is also another way that mind will take us. It will take us in the principles of attentive chanting rather than focusing on the Lord. So, and then Maya will tell you now, and that's how she will give you. She says, you could see so much now nice knowledge you have developed on attentive chanting. Therefore, now you are attending sincerely. See, all these days you never, never bother to chant attentive. You are only finishing the rounds. Only now you have become serious. Very good. This is why now you are advancing. I can tell you that. And otherwise, what it does, let us say, we try to do attentive chanting. God, what am I doing? I am not attentive, I am not chanting attentively. I am only, again Maya has taken me out. And I have never thought about, I have never focused on what I am chanting right now. I am not going to holy name. I am only thinking about the principles of chanting. Right? Then Maya will take you to a different direction. She will tell you, I totally you rascal. You are a real rascal. Okay. For you there is no hope. I told you it is very difficult. So don't do this. See, you are miserable. Trying to do this again and again. It will not work. So better you give it up. At least you finish your route. At least you are happy now. So this will give you those set of this example. So it will take you here, it will take you there. But it will not allow you. You are trying to escape the jail of the mind, of the conditioned mind. It will not allow you so easily. We will have to struggle. That is why Mahaprabhu was so beautiful. He said, three levels of chant. Without Namamara, we cannot go to Namamara. We have to struggle with this Namamara, maybe for an entire lifetime. We have to struggle with Namamara to go to Namamara. Because when you realize the futility of, when we are Namamara for quite long and we are trying and trying and trying, okay, to sincerely chant, that time we will develop humility. We will realize that by our material endeavor, this is not going to happen. Krishna has to observe our sincerity in our chanting and then he has to award us with a kind of chanting. Otherwise, this is not going to happen. And then what happens? Because then we only depend on the Lord for our attentive chanting, but still maintain our sincerity to bring the attention back to the holy name, then Krishna may choose to award us, seeing upon us, he will wait to what extent he is sincere. And then he will award us. Bhattaha smriti jnanam apavancha. He will award us remembrance of himself when we are chanting the holy name. So it's a big struggle. So otherwise Maya can convince us, she can give us congratulatory messages, okay, that we have conquered her, and while keeping her fully in her jaws, we are the jaws of Maya, and we are thinking, where is Maya? I am free. We are flapping something, but we are still in her jaws. So much discussion has been, in ISKCON goes on. Many classes we have heard on the different obstacles that can come in our spiritual life. There can be so many discussions that can go on obstacles. In one class I heard the definition of an obstacle. The author said that it was actually an article, a small article that I was reading, it was by Mahatma. So he was saying that obstacles are things that we focus on when we lose sight of our goals. Obstacles are things we focus on when we lose sight of our goals. Now, so this is the biggest problem with obstacles. It takes us away from our goals. And we saw many examples of how what kind of obstacles we face when we try to escape the jail of material existence. Yet, there is another side to the obstacles. It is a good side to these obstacles. What is that? He says that when we really want something, when we really want something bad enough, I really, really want you, Krishna, for example. When we really want something bad enough, these obstacles just make us want it more. That's a good side of obstacles. When we really want something bad enough, now think in your mind, Krishna, then these obstacles make us want Krishna more. That's a good side of obstacles. Because Lord Krishna stands constantly behind these obstacles. And he is asking all the time, what is more important to you, my dear devotee? What is more important to you? Do you want me or do you want something else in your life? So therefore, a serious devotee is very aware of these obstacles and sees it as a chance to increase our determination and take another step towards Krishna. So devotee sees every obstacle as a chance to take one step more, to surrender more towards the Lord. Now, this is very nicely captured in the Madhya Lila, the conversation between Ramananda Raya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's one of my favorite verses. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Beautiful verse. Says, Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Matihi Kriyatam Yadi Kutaha Api Lambyate Tatra Lavyam Api Mulyam Ekalam Janma Koti Shukritiyam Na Lambyate. Beautiful verse. It says, pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness cannot be had even by pious activity in hundreds and thousands of lives. Janma koti shukriti na labhyate. It can be attained only by paying one price. Only one price you have to pay. That is an intense greed to obtain it. If that greed is available somewhere, one must purchase it without delay. One must purchase it without delay. So therefore, we have to develop this greed to attain the Lord. Just one or two words before, Ramana Maharaj gives a beautiful example. He says, you will like food only when you are hungry. Otherwise, once you have finished that Varuni juice on Balaram Jayanti, and you are perfect, and then someone says, Prabhuji, I have brought Gulab Jamun for you. Enough. Okay, because now you are not greedy. When are you greedy? On Dwadashi day. At that time you are seeing all the samosas kept over there. You are thinking, when will I attain? When will I attain my samosa? Like that. So that is called as greed. So when our hunger for attaining Krishna becomes like that, oh Lord, when will I attain you? When will I attain you? All the time our worry is only that, our only thought is that. Then that is called as tatra lavanya. Greed at any cost. I am willing to pay any price. Any price I am willing to pay. When there is no food, for example, someone says you have to go to Verity right now. Then you have to, you will get some food. Only food is only available there. You will run anywhere in this world. You have to go to the jungle to get it. We go anywhere. Just like for a job, we are willing to go anywhere in the world. They pay us. So there is greed for money. We are willing to do anything. We are willing to tolerate insults. Anything we are willing to tolerate, for attaining the Lord. So we have to have the greed. So once Kesha Prabhu was explaining this few years back, I had this question, many other devotees, two, three devotees simultaneously asked me, how do you attain this greed? Everybody's question. How do I attain this greed? How do I attain this greed? Kesha Prabhu explained to us, this greed can only be attained by associating with people who have that greed. That is, this greed is nothing but Raga Mugam. And Raga Mugam is following the footsteps. Raga Mugam, following the footsteps of those people who have this greed, who have this spontaneity. How long can we be in the realm of Vaidhi Sanamukti? Vaidhi Sanamukti is definitely essential and it will continue. But at some point in time, it has to translate into, it has to lead to this intense greed and anger for Lord Krishna. If it does not, then till that time we are very, very vulnerable, that something else will attract us. Some maya will nicely take us away and we make us greedy for something else. Like that. So Srila Prabhupada further writes then in the last part of this purport, sometimes in order to preach, we have to accept many material activities. Sometimes we have to deal with what is apparently people will call as maya. For example, money. When people, when mayavadi see money, they say, oh, maya, I don't want, don't give me. But Prabhupada is writing here, sometimes in order to preach, we have to accept material, many material activities, but we should remember that everything is for Krishna. If we remember this, there is no chance of our being victimized by material activities. So Prabhupada is writing this. Now, maya is usually considered as the enemy of, by a devotee. Devotee sees maya as enemy. But we have to understand two aspects of maya. The first aspect is, there is actually nothing called as maya. In an absolute sense, there is nothing called as maya. In absolute reality. And this is given in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam in text 34. So it says, maya is only that of which you cannot see a relationship with Krishna. Prabhupada, for Prabhupada, Pandita Samadarshina, he saw everything in this material world in relation to Krishna. So there is no question of maya only exists there. So maya is only that principle which you realize when you are seeing something separate from Otherwise, there is no mind for a devotee, even in this world. That is why Jeevan Mukta, it is possible to be a Jeevan Mukta. Being in this body, being in this material world, and yet being not of this material world. Why is it possible? That was tells you. When you start seeing the connection of every single thing, even money, with Krishna, then that money is no longer mine. Even if a person may have a Rolls Royce car, but if he sees the Rolls Royce car in his relation to serving Krishna better and his devotees, then such a Rolls Royce car no longer becomes Maya. But a person may be living, having a, you know, having a 1940 car which doesn't even work. But if all the time the person is thinking about that car, then that is Maya. A person may be living in a hut, but if all the time the person is only thinking about his life in the hut, then that hut becomes Maya. So Maya is not about what you have or what you don't have. Maya is how our meditation on what we have and what we don't have, and the disconnection of that meditation with Krishna. So that's one principle, key aspect of Maya. The second is, in another sense, Maya, what does Maya do? She kicks us. She kicks us. When Maya kicks us, if we choose to take those kicks and move towards Krishna, we will see that those kicks, that Maya is actually a, she is giving a friendly kick in that sense. So the kicks of Maya, if they push us towards Krishna, then Maya is actually our best friend, because she is then doing us a great service. They are pushing us towards Krishna. So these are two different aspects of Maya. Nevertheless, Lord Krishna gives a general guideline how to deal with Maya. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Daivi Yesha Gunamai Mama Maya Duratya Maam Eva Ye Prapadyante Maya Mena Taramate. So, therefore, unless we endeavor to develop Tatra Lavima, the dream for attaining Krishna, unless we come to the platform where I don't want anything else but devotional service unto the Lord, until then we will be subjugated by the miseries that Maya gives. And we will also be, there is also high risk of being sidelined as a result of the enjoyment that she gives us in our material life. Both are there. Now, Srila Deva Goswami, in his commentary to Canto 8, Chapter 22, 29, 30, he writes this very interesting statement. He says, although there may be many obstacles on the path of the sincere devotee who is preaching the glories of the Lord, such obstacles increase the determination of the devotee. Therefore, Deva Goswami says, the continuous obstacles presented by demigods form a kind of ladder or stairway upon which devotee steadily progresses back to the kingdom of Godhead. So Deva Goswami says, use these obstacles to progress in devotional life. So Bharat Maharaj realized in his next lifetime that, oh, what did I do? From the platform of power, bhakti, then I got sidelined into becoming a deer because of the meditation on the deer. But Lord was, because he was on such a high platform, in the next lifetime also, he knew that what had happened in his previous lifetime. So he immediately used that opportunity as a deer to stay in the association of devotees, because that was the biggest mistake that Bharat Maharaj did. Of course, Bharat Maharaj did not do any mistake, it's a pastime of all, but still, from a tattva point of view, when you see it, then yes, that was a mistake. Trying to do devotional service in isolation from the devotee community, that is not possible. So when we do that, we stand a big risk. Sobhari Muni also tried that, it did not work. He tried to go under the water and meditate, it did not work for him. It will not work for any of us if we try to do bhakti separately from devotees. So therefore, but Bharat Maharaj realized in his next lifetime this point. Then when he was born as Jada Bharat in the next lifetime, then he was completely detached since the time that he came out of the womb of his mother. So much so that then he became a big preacher also. He preached to King Raghunath. That's a beautiful, another beautiful section of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this was the journey of Mahabharata. Going from detachment to attachment to a dear, again back to realizing his folly, and then only developing attachment to the Lord, with complete attachment to the material world. So Jiva Goswami therefore says that if we take this approach to attachment, if we take every obstacle as an opportunity to progress or take one step towards the Lord, then these obstacles are become very useful in our lives. Now today is the Tirobhava Mahotsav of Jiva Goswami. Okay, so we quoted what Jiva Goswami has been. So we talk something about Srila Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami is considered amongst the greatest contributors to the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. Even in fact, he was concerned as one of the supreme most authority in Shastras. Now, it is very auspicious on the Tirobhava Mahotsav of such acharyas to discuss something about these acharyas and meditate on their good qualities throughout the day, and also derive some learnings in our own life. It is also the disappearance day of another great Vaishnava, Sri Devadisha Pandit. So they come together. First we will talk few aspects of Jiva Goswami's life, and then Devadisha Pandit's life, and then we will end up. So Jiva Goswami is amongst our principal Goswamis. He was the son of Sri Vallabha and nephew of Sri Sanatana and Sri Rupa Goswami, all of whom were employed in the service of Nawab Hussain Shah. Now, because of their exemplary services, they were very trusted by the Nawab, and therefore the Nawab gave them a lot of remuneration. So they were generally, Jiva Goswami was born in a very opulent family in that sense. And they had a lot of help. When he was a child, Lord Chaitanya had come to Ramakeli. And Jiva Goswami was blessed by having darshan of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was a very small baby. It is also said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Jiva Goswami was very small, Mahaprabhu gave Jiva Goswami darshan of his Gauranga Mahaprabhu dancing with both hands. So he already had darshan of the Lord. Now, Lord Chaitanya, when he saw Jiva Goswami, Mahaprabhu indicated that he will become a future scholar, a very great scholar in the Gaudiya Sampradaya tradition. On his part, even as a small child, Jiva Goswami would meditate on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu constantly. Since his very childhood, Lord Chaitanya was his very life. Spontaneous attachment to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Later on, what happened was, his father and uncle, they, Jiva Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, as well as Nupam, renounced the family to be with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, young Jiva Goswami then was left with his mother in a place called Fatehabad. So, as a child, because all his uncles and all went away to service, he missed them greatly, and including Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. And whenever he used to remember his uncles and Lord Chaitanya, he would lose his consciousness and fall to the ground in his very childhood. As he got a little bit older, he took up to worship of deities of Sri Sri Ramakrishna. And he used to carefully decorate these deities, offer bhoga, offer arati, and serve them with full attention. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he never indulged in frivolous games in his childhood. Even whatever games he played, they are always associated with Lord Krishna's pastimes. And as he grew further, he started getting into studies, into Shastric studies, under local Pandits. Very soon, the Pandits realized that he had become very proficient in grammar, poetry, as well as rhetoric. And his teachers, again with the eyes of his teachers, his very high levels of intelligence that he had. One day, he heard the news that his father had passed away on the banks of the Ganges. and that day completely unsettled. Though family members tried to give him a lot of consolation, he was disconsolate. But he was disconsolate in a positive way, not in negative way. Not that he went into negative emotions. He was disconsolate in his realization that his family life is the source of utter sadness for all of us. We come together, family life is very good. But when we get separated, then it is the most painful thing. Family life. So he realized that this is the futility of material existence. So someone suggested to him, now that this has happened, why don't we go to Navadvipa with pilgrims and take darshan of Lord, association of Lord Nityananda. So following their instructions, he went along with his pilgrims and had darshan of Lord Nityananda, who was very happy to meet young Jiva Goswami. So he spent many days with Lord Nityananda, touring Navadvip, the nine islands of Navadvip, visiting all the holy places of the Lord's pastimes there. Once that happened, Lord Nityananda ordered him to go to Varanasi, Kashi. Why? Because it is at Kashi that he began his serious study of Vedanta. And who did he study under? Very, very illustrious personality, whose name was Sri Madhusudan Vachaspati. Sri Madhusudan Vachaspati was himself a disciple of the greatest scholar of that time, Sri Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Madhusudan Vachaspati and Jiva Goswami. Now, and the conclusions of all Vedanta as contained in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which were expounded by Lord Chaitanya to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Puri, all those conclusions were very nicely understood by Srila Jiva Goswami. And that was the start of his, you know, becoming the highest scholar. So from there, what happened? After his scholarly studies, he set out for Vrindavan Dham, where he received shelter of his two uncles, Srila Rupa Goswami and Jiva Goswami, because his father had already passed away. Okay. Now, under Rupa Goswami, it is mentioned, Jiva Goswami learned the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he took initiation and divine mantra from Srila Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami engaged him in the service of Sri Sri Radha Damodar. Now, Rupa Goswami also observed the scriptural prowess of Jiva Goswami. So, seeing that scriptural prowess, Rupa Goswami gave proofreading of whatever books he had written to Jiva Goswami. You can imagine what is the level of scholarliness of Jiva Goswami. The proofreading of one of his best works of Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, was given to Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami was so good that not only did he proofread, but he wrote his own commentary on that called as Durgama Sangamani. And then, seeing that, Sanatana Goswami said, why not I also do this? Seeing his erudition, so why not I also ask him to proofread my works? So, Sanatana Goswami had combined the Sri Vaishnava Toshin at that time, which is a commentary on Canto 10 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Jiva Goswami proofread that and he again wrote a commentary called as Laghu Vaishnava Toshin. So, his writings were so good that they completely captivated the hearts of everyone. Now, this was the scholarliness of Jiva Goswami. Now, when one attains such levels of scholarliness, automatically one becomes proud. But Jiva Goswami was not like that. Jiva Goswami, though he was so scholarly, he was extremely humble in his demeanor. So, he engaged in lots and lots of menial services for his uncles, for Sri Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. His service there that he used to bring water regularly for Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami's bathing. So he used to give these services. He used to massage their heads with oil. He used to clean their ashram and he used to worship their deities. He used to cook for them and then he proofread their manuscripts. So that was his greatness. After the passing away of Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, he continued the tradition that both of them had inaugurated. Once, which is defeating upper sampradaya philosophies. So, and also establishing the glory of Vrindavan, Vrajabhakti. So once Srila Deva Goswami travelled to Agra to debate with the Rajputs. And what was the debate all about? Is Yamuna great or Ganga great? Which is greater than all of both. So he very authentically he established and won the debate that Yamuna is more glorious than Ganga. Why? Yes, no doubt, Ganga emanates from Krishna's lotus feet. There's no doubt that makes Ganges glorious. But Yamuna Devi is own consort. So in terms of rasa tattva, Dasya versus being Krishna's own consort, it is higher. Like that. So in that way, he established the supremacy of Yamuna Nadi. So the Mughal emperor was so satisfied with the conclusion that Deva Goswami was presenting that he said, ask me any gift that you want, I will give you. And what did Deva Goswami ask? He asked for blank papers. Who will ask for blank papers? But he asked for blank papers. Why? Because at that time paper was very rare and most of the manuscripts were composed on leaves. So Jiva Goswami saw that anything written on paper is possibly will last longer, like that. So therefore he asked for blank papers from the emperor. And the emperor also gave him some stained paper at that time. Also there is a legend that once when the emperor wanted to confer something on the Goswamis of Vrindavan, the emperor, I think he was probably emperor, he was very favorable to the Vaishnavas. So he wanted to confer something on the Goswamis of Vrindavan. The Goswamis made the emperor issue a farman, and Jiva Goswami was very instrumental in that. Farman means an emperor's order. What was the farman? That in Vrajabhumi, no living entity will be killed anymore. That was the farman he made the emperor. So as a result of this, no king will ever come to hunt in Vrajabhumi anymore. Now, Jiva Goswami was not only, we saw how great a disciple he was, how great a scholar he was, but at the same time, he was great acharya as well. So down the line, he was the one who was instrumenting in cultivating three gems to continue the recipe line. Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivasa Acharya and Dohi Krishnadas or Shamananda Pandit. All three of them were salaried acharyas. Because after that, the whole onus of preaching Gaudiya Vaishnavism came on these three people. And who was their shishya? Was Jiva Goswami. So these people studied all the literature of the Goswamis under Jiva Goswami's tutelage. And based on that, they spread the entire notion of Gaudiya Vaishnavism throughout Bengal. So, Jiva Goswami has left tons and tons of work for all of us. He was the greatest of scholars of his generation. So, he composed many literatures, very many famous literatures, such as Brahma Samhita Tika, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Tika, which is commentary. Tika is commentary, Durgama Sankarani. He wrote the Ujjwal Nilamani Tika, called as Lochana Rochani. Then, Gopal Jambu, Satsandarbhas. Biggest contribution. If one has to be very philosophically, very sound, one can study the Sat Sandarbha, the Tattva Sandarbha, the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Paramatma Sandarbha, Krishna Sandarbha, then the Bhakti Sandarbha and Preeti Sandarbhas. So all this was combined by Jiva Goswami. Then he also combined Srimad Bhagavatam Gita, which is called as Krama Sandarbha, Laghu Vaishnava Toshani on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Gopal Tapanitika. It's called as Sri Sukha Bhutini. So much of literature. There was hardly any literature that Jiva Goswami did not write and comment on. The Srila Jiva Goswami disappeared from this world. He unwound his pastimes in the year 1618 in Vrindavan. It is said, the Gaur Pranodesha Dipika says that he is none other than Vilasa Manjari in Krishna Leela. So that was about Srila Jiva Goswami. We will conclude our class by discussing a few words from Srila Jagadish Pandit, another glorious champion in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. The Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela 11.30 mentions Jagadisha Pandita Haya Jagatapavan Krishna Premamrita Varshe Yena Varshavan, which means that Jagannatha Pandit is the 15th branch of Lord Nityananda's followers and he was the deliverer of the entire world. It is said that devotional love of Krishna showered from Jagadisha Pandit like torrents of rain. Srila Jagadish Pandit Mahashaya, he was born in a family of Vaishnavas. Both his parents were Vaishnavas. After his parents passed away, he came with his wife whose name was Dukhini Devi. He brought his wife Dukhini Devi and younger brother Mahesh to live on the banks of the Ganges. And they built their house near the house of Jagannath Mishra. However, Lord Chaitanya instructed Jagannatha Pandit, Jagadisha Pandit to preach Harinam at Nilachal. So he took shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath as a result of that instruction. At that time he prayed at the feet of Lord Jagannath, and so pleased was Lord Jagannath's prayer that he obtained the deity of Jagannath's Swami, Nayanavadaya, the lotus eyed Lord. He got a deity of that, which he later brought to a place called Jashora on the banks of the Ganges near Chakda. Now this deity was unique. This deity was brought suspended from a staff. This Jagannath deity, it was suspended from a staff, and this time it is still being worshipped in the temple of Lord Jagannath at Jashora. And presently this temple is under the care of Gaudiya Mandal. Now, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda sometimes used to go to Jashora to have festivals, Sankirtan festival there. In the temples, in these temples in Jashora, there are Sri Jagannath, Sri Sri Radha Vallabh and Sri Sri Gaur Gopal, a golden colored form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was established by his wife Dukhini Devi. Now, once it is mentioned that Lord Chaitanya conducted a Sankirtan festival at the home of Jagadish Pandit, and then planned to go to Nilachal. After that, after he visited Jagadisha Pandit, he wanted to go to Nilachal. But Dukhini Devi, who was Jagadisha Pandit's wife, she was so distressed because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will now leave. She was undergoing a feeling of intense separation from the Lord. And the Lord said, "Don't go." And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "I have to go to Nilachal, but I will manifest in this form. You take this deity." So Lord Chaitanya manifested ready form and gave the deity. And he said, "I will eternally remain in your house in the form of this deity." From that deity, which I mentioned earlier as the deity of Gaur Gopal, that deity is still being worshipped there. One day, it is mentioned that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Gaur Hari, was crying incessantly. He was crying, and nobody could control him. Nobody could pacify the Lord. So finally, everyone got fed up and said, "What do you want? Please tell us what do you want. To stop crying, what do you want? We will bring it, but don't cry." Like that. Now that day was Ekadashi day. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, he said, on this Ekadashi day, in Jagadish Pandit's house, and his brother was Hiranya Pandit. He says, in Jagadish and Hiranya's house, they have made some Vishnu Prasad. Okay. So if you can bring that Vishnu Prasad to me, then I will stop crying. So Mahaprabhu was put his foot down. Now here in this, this was seemingly an impossible request from their son. So Satyamata put her hand on her head, and Satyamata began to lament, hearing this kind of request. Now upon hearing the words of the child, the neighbors also laughed in amazement. They said, "How is it that such a young child is aware, first of all, that today is Ekadashi?" Then the ladies then told Nimai, "Are baap, Nimai, don't cry anymore. He will bring you what you have requested." Now, then they went to the two Brahmanas. Now, when these two Brahmanas heard of the child's request, who? The Krishna Pandit and Hiranya Pandit, they were very pleased. Both of them were very intimate friends of Jagannath Mishra. And they were all aware that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, has manifested in the house of Lord Chaitanya. Therefore, whatever they had prepared for Lord Hari in their house for Vishnu, Ekadashi, they brought before Gaura Hari and told him, "Ba, Vishwamal, we have brought everything which you requested. Now please eat it in great happiness and do not cry anymore." So Bhagavan, Sri Gaurachandra Bhagavan, see, along with his friends, he then enjoyed that feast which was prepared by Sri Jagadisha Pandit. And while honoring that feast, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed his transcendental form. In Gaurapanoshtesha Deepika, Jagadish Pandit is sometimes mentioned as one of the wives, somewhere it is mentioned, the wife is one of the wives of the Vedic Brahmanas in Krishna Leela. Elsewhere it is also mentioned that he is Chandrahasa, who is a very famous dancer in Krishna Leela. So today is the Tirobhava Mahotsav of Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Jagadish Pandit. So we will end this class by taking their blessing. Srila Jagadish Pandit Mahashaya ki, Srila Jiva Goswami ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada Bhagavatam ki, Srila Jagadish. 9 o'clock. Stop here and ask if there are any questions or comments. No questions or comments today. Thank you very much for your patience. Let the Lord keep.
Thank you.